Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 21, Back from the Sewers. I am one of your co-hosts, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my good friend Chris Slate.
Hello!
And we are back to talk about the world of Nintendo. Our big topic this week is going to be the world of licensed games, but we're going to start off with the news. So the first big thing in the news this week was that there were a whole bunch of rumors coming out of the Wall Street Journal about Nintendo's next system, the NX.
Yeah, I always love to hear about new console news. Although this seemed to not necessarily introduce new news so much as maybe just reinforce some long-running theories.
Yeah, I mean, it was mostly stuff that we'd already kind of heard about. And, you know, if it wasn't, you know, official, it's at least been, you know, very much assumed by, you know, us and a lot of others. You know, they were talking about how the new system is going to be a handheld console hybrid.
Right. You know, and what I'm curious about, though, is, you know, how exactly does that work? Is it going to be, is the NX more of a kind of a digital platform, kind of like, you know, iOS for Apple, where whether
well,
you
they
buy...
have kind of called it that before. They have kind of said NX as a platform more than as a system. So that's probably pretty accurate.
Right, but the one little juicy tidbit that was maybe a bit unexpected that we heard was, according to that Wall Street Journal article, sources are claiming that it may not be any slouch in the graphics department.
Yeah, they're saying that it's going to be, you know, probably more powerful than current stuff, more powerful than PlayStation 4 or Xbox One.
Yeah, which, I don't know, that if that happens, that'll still kind of surprise me. In a way, it would make sense. It's kind of the logical thing.
Mm-hmm,
but,
you would think.
You know, Nintendo hasn't had, you know, the best graphics, basically, for quite a long time.
Yeah, it's been decades since that's really been one of their hallmarks. And, you know, it makes me wonder, you know, how, like you were saying, how is this going to work with a handheld console hybrid? Will it have the exact same graphics on, you know, both pieces of equipment? Does it mean that you're going to have a handheld that looks, you know, has graphics better than, you know, current PS4 and Xbox One stuff? You know, how expensive would that be to produce? How is it all going to come together? Those are the questions that we really need to have answered. So it might be that we're getting more questions out of this Wall Street Journal stuff than we are new information.
For sure, for sure. And just to go a little bit more into the thing about the better graphics, the exact quote from, this isn't from the article itself, but from the author of the article. He says, quote, several people who have seen a demo said what they saw was impossible to run on a computer without, quote, industry-leading or cutting-edge chips. Cutting-edge in what way, they refuse to elaborate. And an important thing to remember, probably you know well already, is that chip specs won't be finalized until much closer to the release. So, you know, he's kind of reminded us there of what we always know, that things are subject to change. But mm-hmm. that supposedly people seeing closed-door demos of this, I'm guessing third parties and developers that Nintendo is trying to get on board with NX, are claiming that what they've seen now can't be done without, you know, top-of-the-line chips. So, you know, that definitely sounds like a, you know, a PS4 conquering kind of machine. And then how do you get even PS4 quality graphics, though, on a handheld in
right.
even 2017? Because, you know, I've been playing, you and I both have been playing a lot of Metal Gear Solid 5 The Phantom Pain on our PS4s, and as pretty as that game is, it's probably not even the prettiest PS4 game. And I'm struggling to think about how you could possibly have that kind of experience next year on a handheld that, you know, isn't a ridiculous amount of money.
Right, that's exactly.
But maybe it's going to be a situation, I mean, you'd think that the whole idea of the NX platform and a console kind of handheld hybrid is that they share the same game library. But maybe it only goes one way. Maybe they're premium kind of experiences on the console, and you can't necessarily play downstream on a handheld, but maybe everything for the handheld can be played kind of upstream on the console. Or maybe this
is... Yeah, that's true. It could be like iOS, like you were saying before, you know, making that comparison. You can play any iPhone game on your iPad, but it doesn't necessarily go the other way.
Yeah, I didn't think of it like that, but that is a very good comparison. And, you know, and that doesn't seem quite ideal, but I guess that's maybe more realistic.
Well, I mean, Nintendo, you know, they are the wizards when it comes to this sort of thing. So, yeah, we'll just have to sit back and find out. And, you know, I assume they know what they're doing. They usually do. You know, it's obvious there are some exceptions. But, you know, if anyone can pull this sort of thing off, it's them.
Yeah. And what do you think, really quick, if you had to guess, are we going to hear about this thing from Nintendo before E3 next year? Or is it E3 next year when they give the first word?
I think it'll be before E3. Hmm. And that was another thing that this article was saying, though. They're claiming that it's going to, you know, hit at the end of next year. And, you know, there had been rumblings about that before. It didn't seem out of the question. It would mean only a 4-year life cycle for Wii U. I was kind of hoping that wouldn't happen. They'd be able to, you know, get 5 years out of it like a traditional system does. But, you know, considering Wii U's position, I guess it's not too surprising.
Well, I've played my Wii U a lot more than most people, and I really, really enjoy a lot of the games on it. But given the state of things, I wouldn't shed a single tear if they came in with a successor sooner rather than later. I don't think anyone likes to see Nintendo kind of struggling along and kind of getting by. They want to see Nintendo kind of thriving and mm-hmm. having another shot at the brass ring.
Yeah, it's not like Dreamcast where it died off in less than 2 years, or Virtual Boy where it died off, I think it was like in a week.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if you're, the only people that have kind of signed on for a Wii U at this point are the Nintendo faithful, and I think they, more than anybody, will be excited to see a new system.
Mm-hmm. So here's another juicy rumor that came out recently. I think it actually hit while I was on vacation, so we didn't get to talk about it here. But that rumor is that Twilight Princess is going to be getting an HD remake on Wii U.
Now, I saw a lot of that, and I saw a lot of back and forth online about, you know, is it really, because I didn't get all the details, is it really Twilight Princess HD? Could it possibly just be Twilight Princess, the original Wii or GameCube versions coming to Virtual Console? What did you hear?
Well, I mean, I heard the same thing. It was a lot of a conversation about both, but people claim they've said something saying, you know, hidden within, you know, the specs of, you know, Nintendo's deepest, darkest online something or others. You know, claiming that it said it was going to be, you know, an HD version, something in a name or a file name, something like that. Either way, you know, it's pretty cool. I mean, it could just be that it is the Wii game, and now you can get it as digital download just like you can with, you know, Super Mario Galaxy 2 and Punch-Out and whatnot. But if it was an HD remake, I mean, that would be really, really cool. I would really enjoy that a lot.
Yeah, I love that game. I think it's very underappreciated. Amongst the general Zelda crowd, it's one of my favorite Zeldas, and it has an amazing art style that looks great even in SD, but, you know, brought up into HD, I think it would really make that game shine.
Yeah, you know, I've seen some images of it done through the Dolphin emulator, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. And it looks pretty fantastic in high def.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see also if they did do it, which playstyle they go with, or would they give people the choice to go kind of with the traditional controls from GameCube, or with the kind of Wii Remote waggle sword swinging from the Wii version. And also, if you remember those two versions, the worlds were flipped.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, which one would they choose? How would that all handle? Or if it was like Wind Waker HD, would they kind of just forge a new path and kind of put a lot of emphasis on new features with the gamepad and things like that?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping it would be, you know, based upon the original version, the GameCube version. You know, that was the platform it was originally meant to be on. That's originally how it was developed. And, you know, I've played the Wii version a ton. You know, of course, I co-wrote the guidebook, and so I had to put in a ton of playtime, replaying stuff. And I've always wanted to go back and play the GameCube version, but I basically couldn't, because it's like the Wii version is so ingrained in my head. Like, if I tried to play this reverse world flipped version, just my brain would probably explode all over the place. It'd be very messy and gross.
Be like if you walked out of the front door of your house and just all the streets were backward.
Yeah.
You can kind of figure it out, but you kind of just don't want to.
I think that if I were to play it now, if I were to play the GameCube version, I could do it. And, you know, I wouldn't be exploding too much. But, you know, a lot of years have passed. And, you know, it'd be cool to not have to, you know, dig out that old GameCube copy, but to play an updated HD version. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, I might actually prefer the GameCube version, since that's the version I never played. And it's been mm-hmm. long enough, and since I didn't have to write a player's guide, I'd totally be, you know, it'd feel totally fresh, and I don't think I would have any trouble. Mm-hmm. So, I'd be up either way, but as long as it's in HD and hopefully they've got some fun new features like they put into Wind Waker HD, I'd be happy.
Yeah, that would be great. I will cross my fingers and hope that this rumor turns out to be true.
Yep, it makes a lot of sense, especially when Nintendo's kind of struggling to put a lot of titles out there.
Yep, and you know, the Zelda that was supposed to be out, obviously, you know, didn't happen.
Although, what if, now here's a little conspiracy for you, they kind of gave us Wind Waker HD when they first showed it. They said, you know what, we're not going to have the first full Wii U Zelda ready for a while, so mm-hmm. here's Wind Waker HD to tide you over. what if Twilight Princess HD is meant to kind of tide us over, because the new Zelda Wii U isn't even coming out till later than we might have thought after the initial delay, or maybe not even at all, maybe coming to NX only. And this is something maybe meant to smooth things over with the fans.
It's possible. I mean, I kind of still think it'll probably come out on both systems. It'll work on NX as well as Wii U, you know, kind of like the original Twilight Princess, you know, came out on both systems. But yeah, that's a possibility as well.
Yeah, I think, like you said, like with Twilight Princess, I think they'll put out a Wii U version, if only to just so they don't go back on their promise to the fans. Hopefully, though, they wouldn't hold back an NX version, you know, from being everything it could be if they really wanted to make the most of that new system.
Yeah, one would think. So speaking of new stuff for some of our favorite franchises, there's a little bit of an update for Super Mario Maker. Specifically, there is another Japanese-centric costume for the Mystery Mushroom that's been revealed. This time, it is a wacky version of Mario, Super Mario-kun, based on a long-running Japanese manga.
Yeah, I mean, what are they going to start announcing some weird U.S.-centric stuff?
Yeah,
and we haven't,
a good question.
And we haven't gotten any details on this stuff as far as when it's going to be made available in Japan or if it is going to come overseas. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just weird that this stuff kind of keeps getting shown without any real details.
Well, they did give one detail, and that was that the creator of Super Mario Kun is making a level as well, and that's going to be out in early November.
Oh, really? I didn't see that part.
Yeah, yeah, that's happening. But will the sprite be available then as well? We don't know.
Well, you'd think the creator of that version of Mario would definitely want to incorporate that costume into his level.
You would think.
But that's weird the way they phrased that, or the way you phrased it, how it's going to be made available in November. By made available, does that just mean that it gets uploaded along with everyone else's levels and they maybe promote the download code? Or is there going to be some special way, kind of like when you get a special gold pants me visiting your street pass, or your spot pass rather, is there going to be some special, you know, way to feature that as a you know, creator download or what have you?
I don't know. My mind's been wandering ever since you said the word pants. And that's not all. There's some other Mario Maker news as well, huh?
Yeah, the thing's been selling really well. It's sold over 500,000 in the U.S. alone. And as of like 3 weeks ago, I think it had already topped 1 million worldwide.
Yeah, that's what Nintendo had said.
And apparently Nintendo of America says that's enough to have driven 110% lift in Wii U hardware sales.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so it's pushing units. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it's the kind of game, you know, even if you haven't checked into Wii U straight away, I mean, everybody's played a Mario game probably at some point in their life. And this is the kind of game that might bring some of those lapsed fans back.
Yeah, for sure. And that's not the only one that's been, you know, burning up the sales charts. Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer sold about 115,000 copies in its first week. And through the first 9 months of this year, 3DS sales are up 25% over last year. So, hey, got some good news for Nintendo.
Yeah, and it's surprisingly good news because, you know, there haven't been a lot of 3DS games coming out.
Mm-hmm. But speaking of upcoming 3DS games, Yo-Kai Watch is coming out on November 6th, and Nintendo is doing something very smart. They are doing a 2DS bundle that includes the game preloaded on the system, and it is selling for $99.99.
Yeah, I mean, who's to say if they'll be able to start the next kind of Pokemon-type phenomenon like this, like I'm sure they hope to. Mm-hmm. But that's a great, you know, way to try to do it. You know, if you've got kids out there watching the cartoon or you know, kids that are just hearing about Yo-Kai Watch but don't already have a system, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I've been hearing a lot of positive buzz around the property, around the TV show, around the manga, and I feel like $99 is like that magical price point. I mean, I feel like it's a magical price point just for the system by itself to be sort of an impulse buy, but to have Yo-Kai Watch on there, you know, makes it even more of, you know, the sort of impulse buy you just pick up, be like, oh, I'm going to see that and, you know, buy it for my kid for Christmas. So I think this is a pretty darn clever thing for them to do.
Yeah, that's right. When you put it that way, I mean, that's a brand new game. It isn't like it's a game that's already kind of sold 1 million units and now it's getting packed in. Mm-hmm. Brand new game day one, you're essentially getting, you know, if you'd pay $40 for that normally, you're essentially getting the system for 60.
Yeah. So now I would like to talk about some Nintendo collectibles. or stuff that's not by Nintendo, but some games that have appeared on Nintendo systems. Have you seen the Castlevania 1 Simon Belmont statue from First Four Figures?
I did. You got a bear fur trunk version of Simon Belmont again.
Run around in his leather skirt and hairy underpants, and he's got his whip and his cross, and he's ready to take the fight to Dracula.
Yeah, it looked pretty cool. That's definitely my preferred version of Castlevania, just because as ridiculous as he can look, that's what I grew up playing.
Well, I mean, it's not nearly as ridiculous as the, tight-skinned Simon Belmont from Castlevania Judgment, that tried to reinvent him. That was, really over the top. But, the first one that First Four Figures did was based on, Lords of Shadow. It's like, I don't really care about this guy. He's got, it was a decent game, I thought. Apparently, I liked it better than most. But I certainly don't have a lot of nostalgia for it. So seeing that they're finally doing one of Simon instead, that seems pretty darn nice. The price is not quite so nice, though. It's, I think, around the $440 mark.
Wow, that's a lot even for First Four Figures, and that stuff's usually kind of pricey.
Yeah, I bought some Mega Man stuff and some Zelda stuff that's more in the $200-ish range, but $400, yeah, that is pretty darn high. Much more affordable, however, was a recent music CD that came out featuring remixed tunes from the Super NES classic Chrono Trigger, as well as its PlayStation sequel Chrono Cross. And, those are some really good games. They had really good music. Yasunori Mitsuda is one of my, favorite composers. And so I was really looking forward to this, and I, imported the CD as soon as I could. And it's pretty okay. It's not as good as I was hoping for. Half the songs are from Chrono Trigger, half the songs are from Chrono Cross. Apparently I don't remember the soundtrack to Chrono Cross as well as I thought I did, because when those tracks come on, my brain kind of, tunes out a little bit. Also, they have added vocals to many of the tracks, which, is always kind of weird. I mean, fortunately, it's not like, the hilarious, Castlevania CDs we talked about, where, they put in, awful, broken lyrics and then rap to it. These are actually, pretty good, pretty quality stuff. There's not a whole lot there, and it kind of, maybe weakens the overall appeal a bit, I think. Were you a fan of the Chrono Trigger music?
I liked it okay. I didn't kind of, especially that era of RPG games, the music has a lot of really dedicated fans. I kind of preferred, the more kind of, bouncy kind of, first party Nintendo stuff. But I don't know. I'm not really the biggest kind of, what did you say? It was kind of a rearranged album or?
Yeah. I mean, it's totally, symphonic.
Yeah. Well, that's nice sometimes. Usually, though, I just prefer the chiptunes. I mean, that's the 100% undiluted nostalgia kick,
Well, yeah, I've been a fan of, remixed and arranged stuff for a long time. Like hearing it, its original form, like hearing it in its remixed form. I like hearing different versions of, these classic tunes. I will say that, the two last tracks on the album, those being a mix of A Distant Promise, which is, sort of, Chrono and Marla's theme song. And the one after that is the ending theme, To Far Away Times. I thought both of those came out really well. I mean, they both have the vocals on them, which is kind of weird, but it's actually, pretty powerful stuff. I don't want to, spoil anything in case you haven't played the game. And by that, when I say you, I mean you, Slay, because I know you haven't finished Chrono Trigger.
I'm pretty far.
But there's, a pretty powerful part about halfway through the game. And, I've never really, thought about it that deeply, but the lyrics to these songs, pull it out. And I'm like, wow, this is, kind of intriguing and, makes me get a little emotional. So even though, it wasn't as good as I would have liked overall, there's definitely, some good qualities in the CD. I do not regret having picked it up.
So you'd recommend it to Chrono Trigger fans?
With some caveats. I guess it depends on how big of a fan you are and how much you can put up with the vocals overlaid on these classic tracks.
Mm.
And then there was one other bit of collectible news that you brought to my attention, and that is that the Build-A-Bear, not Build-A-Beard, not Build-A-Beer, but Build-A-Bear, they're doing a Pokemon crossover.
Yeah. I mean, I probably would have been exposed to this at some point anyway, because my kids love Build-A-Bear. But I saw the story online. You can get Pikachu will be one of the little creatures you can have stuffed and taken home to mount on your wall, starting in early 2016. It's going to be available pretty much everywhere. They specified U.S., Canada, Europe, and Australia. You can outfit it with a Pokeball hoodie, and if you order it online, you can apparently get a Charizard costume. So yeah, I guess kind of a gamery reason to go into a kid's teddy bear store if you want a cool little Pokemon collectible.
All right, stuffed and mounted Pikachus, let's go. I guess continuing on the talk of collectibles, we'll talk about our favorite type of Nintendo collectible, Amiibo.
Amiibo!
So, Yoshi's Woolly World is out. We will talk about that in just a little bit. But to go along with it, we have the Amiibo. We have the green yarn Yoshi, the blue yarn Yoshi, and the pink yarn Yoshi. They are all out in the United States.
Yep, I'm finally holding them right here. I know you've had them for a little while because you import everything.
Well, I had the blue one. I did not have the green one. I did not have the pink one, but I do now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, they're all pretty much identical except for the color. But they're super cute. They're super adorable. And it's fun. Other than the cards, which, you know, technically are Amiibo for Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer, these are the first kind of different types of Amiibo that I've had. And it's really cool just to think about, you know, what all they can do with the idea.
Yeah, and again, they've got, you know, really, really superb craftsmanship. Yeah, I was looking at them and just, you know, seeing how, you know, well made they are. And, you know, it's thoroughly impressive.
Yeah, and I was also impressed. We've talked about this. I mean, this is a recurring theme lately when we talk about Amiibo, but it's been a lot easier to find some of these newer ones than I would have expected. I especially thought either blue or pink for some reason would have been ridiculously hard to find. But the day that the game came out, you know, I didn't pick up my copy until I was on my way home from work, and the GameStop near my house still had all of these. You could get, you know, if I hadn't pre-ordered anything, I could have picked them up right then.
Yeah, I didn't go looking the day they came out. I didn't go checking until the following day, and I was able to find about 11 pink Yoshis at the various stores I went to, and only one blue Yoshi, and that was only at GameStop. I kind of figured blue would be the harder one to find. That's why I ended up, you know, importing him earlier. But you know, neither of them were impossible to get, even you know, on the next day. And also the bundle with green Yoshi was still, you know, available that next day as well. So yeah, that was cool. Glad to add those to my collection.
Yeah, and speaking of stuff being available, a lot of the old Amiibo are coming back.
They are. Yeah, I went out and saw a bunch of that stuff on the weekend. The same day that I was seeing the Yoshis, I was, you know, seeing, I saw, like, you know, a ton of Gray Ninjas. I saw a whole bunch of Little Max. It was like I had, you know, accidentally, you know, woken up that morning and gone out to another dimension.
Yeah, I think I saw a bunch of Captain Falcons at a Toys R Us near me. And these are Amiibo.
Oh, wow. I've never seen him in a store.
Yeah, I was going to say, these are Amiibo I've never seen in a store to begin with, and now they're, you know, pretty plentiful. And, you know, we talked, or Lara mentioned last week that Toys R Us is getting the Villager restock exclusively. So, you know, like we said before, I think that now that the Smash line is winding down, they've freed up more production resources for some of these older figures.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, the Best Buy that's near me, you know, as you are aware, is terrible.
Yep.
But, you know, I even went there and they had Marth. That's the first time I've ever seen any Fire Emblem Amiibo in a store.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I ever have.
But, yeah, so even he's getting out there. But, you know, what other kind of Amiibo I was able to get my hands on is the upcoming Mii Amiibo. That's right. I went ahead and ordered those from overseas as well.
You keep setting your Wii U clock ahead to get all these future Amiibos, don't you?
Yes, that's exactly how it works. So I've got all these, and I'm going to be honest. They are probably my least favorite Amiibo yet.
Now, is that because of the build quality or just because of what they are, kind of bland, characterless Miis?
Just because of what they are. I mean, looking at the quality, of the sculpts and things, again, you know, I'm thoroughly impressed, you know, especially after seeing, you know, the Skylander stuff up close and how messy the paint jobs are and all that. No, these things are impeccable. You know, everything looks great about them. But, you know, unlike pretty much every other Amiibo character that's been made, where it's, you know, like some beloved character from a long-lost franchise or a popular franchise or something that, you know, has a lot of nostalgic value for me. Yeah, you know, these are just, you know, pretty generic, you know, faceless characters that that really don't mean that much. Especially the Brawler, who, you know, he doesn't even have a cool weapon. I mean, at least the Gunner has her blaster arm, and the Swordfighter has, you know, his blade. But the Brawler just kind of, there he is with, you know, one of his fists up and his blank expression on his face.
Well, I guess they are what they are. You know, they were never going to be the most exciting characters, but I'm glad they were included, because initially I remember there was some wonder on if Nintendo would even attempt those. But mm-hmm. It is a shame they didn't find out. And I this sounds totally unfeasible, but I remember initially when they announced the Amiibo at E3 a couple years ago, in an interview, Miyamoto suggested they had at least tested trying to do custom Mi Amiibo. He said he had one of himself that had been, you know, doctored up. So it's a shame they didn't figure that out. That would have been fun if I could have had my Mi as he looks in the game. But
yeah, that would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, but realistically speaking, this is probably the best we could have hoped for.
Yeah, I mean, I knew what I was getting when I bought these. It's no surprise that they look, you know, exactly like their in-game models. So, you know, in those regards, you know, it's certainly a success. But yeah, like I said, it's kind of my least favorites. And, you know, it strikes me as kind of weird that they went with, you know, all white dudes as the Mi's. I mean, that's how it is in the game, too. And it didn't really, you know, strike me as weird until I'm looking at them here. I'm like, yeah, they could have at least, you know, made one of them, you know, of a different skin tone or something like that. But, oh, well, whatever.
Yeah, good point.
Not the end of the world. But, hey, you know, you'll be able to have your chance to buy those on, I think it's November 1st. It's the 3-pack. It's coming to Toys R Us. And, you know, we also got word of some other store-exclusive Amiibos. Falco, the pre-order for that went live while I was off on my vacation. It's going to be a Best Buy exclusive.
Yeah, the exclusives continue. You know, my knee-jerk reaction is still to just cry foul whenever I hear about these retailer exclusives. But lately they've been so plentiful, it's kind of a good thing.
Yeah, they've actually been a lot easier to find than the you know, supposedly common ones. But you know, I was over in Florida, but I sent you a message, so you're able to get in your order. I was able to get in my order, and he's coming out on the 20th of November, and we will get him then. That should be wrapping up all the original Smash Brothers Amiibo, and I'll finally get those. But a week before that happens, we'll be getting our hands on Animal Crossing Amiibo. Pre-orders for those went up as well.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them coming, and mm-hmm. they've announced even more for Japan. I think we may have talked about this before, but
we have.
But you know, they look cute. I just hope they don't go too crazy. I don't want to own 100 or even 400 you know, little animals.
Yeah, I know both you and I went on to walmart.com, place our orders. We got Mabel. There's the 3-pack with KK Slider, Reese, and Cyrus. There's also Tom Nook. Two of them are bundled with the game. And then Lottie is coming later. And you know, the rumor is it's going to be an exclusive to possibly Target or to Best Buy. I believe it's a Best Buy exclusive in Canada, right?
Right, but they don't have Target in Canada, so... Could be that they had to go with a different partner there than they do here. We'll have to see.
Yeah, people have you know, seen that it is in a Target system, which would be kind of weird for something they weren't going to carry.
Oh,
but, you know, stranger things have happened. So, yeah, we'll see how that all unfolds.
Yeah, now if they can just give us a release date for the Shovel Knight Amiibo, I think it's been confirmed in the UK. It was originally scheduled for sometime in November, but now it's been set for December 4th. But, that one's got me worried because it's you know, that it's an indie Amiibo. It's not really going through Nintendo's usual channels, and I could just see that one being a nightmare to get.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, they've been surprisingly quiet over here in the U.S. You know, the release date of the game got pushed back, the physical version of the game, and, you know, still no word about the pre-orders for the Amiibo over here. I guess we'll have to see. I suspect, you know, they'll try to, you know, make him available as best they can. But it would be nice to hear something more official and find out just what's going on.
Yeah, I imagine when you're producing Shovel Knight Amiibo, it's tough to gauge exactly how many to make. Like Amiibo in general, because of, you know, collectors tend to sell more than people would initially think. But then again, Shovel Knight's one of the lesser known characters. Despite his success, he's still not, you know, a Nintendo mainstay. So hopefully they aim high and make maybe a few more than they need rather than you know, underproduce.
Yeah, I guess we'll see how it all unfolds. Huh. So, as I mentioned earlier, we are you know, just coming off of a few major releases. Yoshi's Woolly World came out just this past Friday.
Yep, and it's crazy just how, you know, when it rains, it pours. I mean, I'm still playing a lot of Mario Maker, a ton of
it. Yeah,
man, actually.
It wasn't that long ago. We didn't have any games to talk about. It's like, well, we're in the middle of a gaming drought. Guess we got to play Final Fight.
Yeah, we actually did a whole podcast just giving you tips. You know, tie two cans together with string. Entertain yourself that way. But now we've got Yoshi's Woolly World. I've got Mario Maker. I'm juggling that still with you know, some stuff on some other systems, Metal Gear, and then
Chibi Robo Ziplash just came
Chibi
out.
Robo.
A little bit before that, and Zelda's about to come out.
Yeah, and they had the demo, which we'll talk about in a second as well. So I've been playing that. It's pretty amazing. I mean, in another month, I'll still probably just be playing these same games. I guess in December we get, there's a couple things coming out. We still got Xenoblade to go, but wow, it really does feel like this is the point of the year that Nintendo fans have been heading toward all along. And it's been pretty amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird, you know. Nintendo says like, oh, they do like, you know, 90% of their sales, you know, around the holidays. Maybe that's because they release almost all their freaking games around the holidays. Maybe
yeah,
they would sell games better throughout the year if they actually had some releases.
I mean, it's a
sort of a chicken and the egg thing.
Exactly. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that used to be the logic that the whole industry swore by. But now, then what you started to see was a lot of games that were intended for Christmas over the last few generations started slipping into the next year. And then I think all the GTAs, or at least the last few, have come out like in March or something. I could be wrong about that, but I know it's always like early in the year rather than Christmas time.
Yeah, seems to be.
And they do.
But, I mean,
and they do just fine.
Look at Splatoon. You know, Splatoon came out in June, and it, you know, sold like crazy.
Yeah, and you get the chance to double dip. I mean, Splatoon will be the kind of game that establishes itself early in the year. All throughout the year, people are going to be playing it at friends' houses, hearing about it. It's building up on social media. You're kind of hearing the buzz. And then when it comes to Christmas time, you know, you get to re-promote it. And maybe some of those people that were, you know, had a little interest in that game have heard about it. And now they're going to go out and pick up a Wii U. So, you know, you don't have to hit with everything you got at the same time because it kind of just gets drowned out in the noise.
Mm-hmm. Yep, this is true. So I would love to get your impressions on Yoshi's Woolly World, but before I do that, you know, since I wasn't able to talk about Chibi Robo Ziplash last week, I thought maybe I would give some comments on that first.
Yeah, please do, because you had a couple of really good points I failed to mention last week.
Now, you know, overall, I'm enjoying the game. I think it's a fun platformer. I love the Ziplash mechanic. You know, a good grappling hook is always a lot of fun for me. I didn't really have, you know, as many problems with the pacing as you did. I mean, certainly, I think if it were a little bit snappier, it might feel like a more traditional action game, but it doesn't really, you know, bother me in that sense. But there were a couple things that really stood out to me that felt un-Nintendo-like. The first one being that you've got these two buttons, X and Y, for your Ziplash and for your Whiplash. But, you know, one of them you tap the button, one of them you hold down the button. I don't understand why it's two buttons. They could have, you know, really simplified things by just, you know, assigning it to a single button. You know, you tap it to do your attack. You hold it down to do the long range grapple. And, you know, when you're jumping and you hold it, that lets you do your hover. Maybe, you know, I haven't played that far into the game yet. I've only gone through the first world and a little bit of the second world. You know, maybe I'll discover there's some sort of additional move you learn that really changes everything. It's like, oh, well, this is definitely why they had to have two buttons. But right now, it just seems like it was kind of a, you know, a weird choice, and you know, overly complicates the game. Very, like I said, un-Nintendo-like.
And I think that exemplifies kind of all the little issues, the niggling little things about this game. Is it just felt like it needed an extra little last kind of layer of polish.
Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, they've got this really bizarre system for going to your next level. You finish your level, then you have to play a, you know, little roulette wheel to move forward the correct number of levels, And it'll be like, oh, this lets me skip levels? Oh, that's great. Only that's not the case at all. You have to play through every single level in the world to be able to fight the boss and proceed on to the next area. And it's like, why would you ever do that? What do you think is fun about this? I mean, you know, in Mario World, if you use a warp zone, you know, you can skip ahead. That's great. But this thing's just, you know, forcing you to replay areas if you happen to have, you know, bad timing on this wheel. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I don't see how that benefits anybody.
A good comparison would be if you're playing a traditional Mario game, let's say Super Mario Bros. 3, and you finish a level, but then you have to do a roulette wheel, and if luck isn't on your side, you have to go back and replay one of the levels you've already beaten to get another, just to get another chance to actually play a new level.
Yeah, it does not make any sense at all. I don't see why you would put that in your game. Doesn't ruin the title for me, but it just, you know, sort of, like you said, exemplifies the extra polish that probably would have gone a long way in making this a better product.
Yeah, and it really annoys me because I'm the type of player that likes to max out everything in a level. I like to find all the hidden goodies, get 100% completion on it before I move on to the next level. Because, you know, if I go around and come back, then all that stuff and all the stuff I learned to have a better second playthrough won't be fresh in my mind anymore.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, there's little things they give you that you can do, like, you know, you can put more tiles on your little roulette wheel to help you get the number that you want.
If you spend some currency to do so.
Yeah, yeah. But the whole thing, it's just a remarkably kind of wonky, overcomplicated system that just doesn't need to be there at all.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, they've gone on record, Nintendo has, and said, hey, if this game doesn't sell well, this is the end for Chibi-Robo. Well, if that was really the case, they probably should have thought things through a little bit better.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, it's easy to talk negatively about this game, but it is really, really good. It's just
I would still, you know, give it pretty decent marks, 7.5 maybe.
It makes it more annoying is that, you know, I'm enjoying something and then something irksome gets in the way. If it was altogether bad, it wouldn't bother me. I'd just, you know, move along.
That's right. Yeah, crap on top of crap. You don't have to worry about it. Yeah. But it's holding back the rest. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Okay, so Yoshi's Woolly World. Lay it on me.
Well, let's see. So far, I am. I think I've completed the first two worlds, and I've 100% completed World 1, which means I've gone back and gotten every little hidden flower, every little hidden heart, and what's the other thing you have to collect? All the collectibles for each level. And I've done that pretty much for World 2.
The yarn, the yarn balls that unlock the new character skins for Yoshi.
Yeah, that's what I forgot. Those are cool. And so I got those for the first two worlds. So even though I've only completed the first two worlds, I've been playing it for quite a while and really maxing out and replaying every level. And so at this point, it's early, yet it's not early.
Collector Schmolector, how are you enjoying the gameplay?
I'm really enjoying it. I'm trying to decide exactly how much. I mean, the big thing, right, ever since the original Yoshi's Island on Super Nintendo.
Yes, the game you hated.
I retroactively went back and loved it. Everybody's waiting for that first sequel that really lives up to the quality of the original. And we've had a few games that I think in some cases were overlooked or not as appreciated as they should have been. But still, I don't think anyone would argue that anything since the original is better than the original. So was this going to be the game that finally fulfilled that promise? I guess it's too early to say just yet. I have a couple of concerns, but overwhelmingly, it is just a really fun platformer. It's charming as hell. I didn't even think I'd want to switch Yoshi into the different costumes, or rather the different patterns, as much as I have been. But it's kind of fun to switch even every
Why
time.
I
don't know. I'm just kind of a boring player when it comes to that stuff. Like, you know, in Mario Kart, I usually just play as Mario. Or if, you know, there's a standard option, I'm usually happy for that. But in this
it's
one,
it's true. You do usually eat just plain cheeseburgers.
Yep. But in this one, it's so easy to just, you know, once you unlock a new guy, he just stands right next to his level. Just go ahead and press A, swap with him, take him to the next level. And it's kind of fun that way.
To be talked to.
Yeah. You know, and that's also kind of a fun little mind game I get into where, you know, like I just beat a level and I'll take the character I unlocked in that level back into that level to unlock the other stuff. So it's like I'm showing that level who's boss or something. I don't know. Anyway. It's
totally meta.
It's really fun. It feels really good. I did try to play. I had one experience with the. I forget if it's called casual mode or if there's another name for it, but it's essentially casual mode.
Mm-hmm. I think that's actually what it's called.
Yeah, where you get your little wings, and I guess I haven't mastered that enough. But I thought this would be a good opportunity to play with my 9-year-old daughter, who can't really keep up in a game where she doesn't have some kind of little helper or advantage. Uh-huh. And it was weird. Like, we couldn't really fly. We couldn't fly up. We just kind of flew forward, and
it's just
constantly
sort of infinite
sinking.
Hover, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I guess it is infinite hover. So I don't know. In the end, it didn't even really help her that much. So that mode's still a question mark for me. So I've had to go it alone here. But I'm enjoying it as much as, or in the same way I would enjoy Yoshi games traditionally. It's a blast, and it's also erased a bit of a bitter taste in my mouth left from Kirby's Epic Yarn, which is a totally fine game. But it was just so, ridiculously easy that for someone like me, I got bored with it really fast.
And that's the important thing about this, is it is the real deal. It's got the super cutesy graphics. And sure, it does look beautiful to see all these textile graphics in HD. But it's still, a real, gamer's game, a real Nintendo platformer with all that challenge and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you just want to play straight through a level and not worry about getting all the collectibles, it's doable, or at least so far through World 2, it's totally doable by, I think, a wide range of players. But if you really want to challenge yourself and get everything, then, the skill level, spikes up, and you really are challenged to do some stuff. And the one gripe I have against the game, the one major gripe at the moment, is I am really not digging the music. It's the track to the very first level is the only one that I kind of like, that's kind of gotten stuck in my head a little bit. It's the one you usually hear in trailers and stuff. But I think they really took the whole game, they seem so concerned about making sure that everyone and their grandma can play it. Like, okay, there's challenging stuff for people like me, but then they put in the casual mode. Then they also, on top of that, put in all these badges you can buy with the in-game, currency. You collect the beads or whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. And, you can do things like that, like make yourself invulnerable to fire, or, protect yourself from falling in pits, that kind of stuff. Which, that's fine, too. It's optional. You can ignore it if you don't want it.
Sure.
But it just permeates the whole game, this kind of, don't be intimidated, to the point where the music is just really sleepy and uninspired for the most part, in my opinion. And you compare that to the original Yoshi's Island, which is one of my all-time favorite soundtracks. And it's, in kind of the Mario fashion, it's cutesy, but it has real energy to it. It has a very bouncy kind of we're on an adventure riff, even though it's, it's not any kind of hardcore intimidating tune or anything. So when I'm playing the new Yoshi's Island, it's actually... I don't know. Sometimes, most of the time, unless it's really great or really terrible, I don't notice music in a game. So the fact that I am noticing it and it's annoying me, I think, at least for me, shows that maybe they went in a totally wrong direction with that soundtrack.
Well, I can't say I've had any big problems with the music, but I guess I haven't really noticed a lot of it either. I haven't played nearly as much as you have either, though. I've only gone through the first world. I don't think I've 100%ed all the levels yet, although I have, I think, the majority of them. I don't really have any complaints so far. It's got cool platforming, some cool little platforming, I guess you could call them puzzles, to get some of the hidden goodies. It's a blast so far. Really liking it.
Yeah.
Even more than I thought I was going to, even after I played the demo, a couple different demos at E3. And it seemed pretty solid, but I'm enjoying it even more than I thought I was going to after that. So I'm quite pleased.
Yeah, me too. My music concerns aside. And speaking of challenge again, just like in the Yoshi's Island, that special stage in each world that you unlock if you get all the flowers is super damn hard. the one just in World 1 is there's no floor in the level. And it's just kind of water that rushes up to the top and then comes back down again. And you can stand on the water for a few seconds, then you have to just do several flutter jumps in a row just to stay airborne and alive long enough to wait for the water to come back while you're dodging falling Shy Guys and all sorts of other stuff. It took me a while to 100% complete that one. But I'm looking forward to that in each world, that one really nasty kind of super challenge.
Sounds like fun. So tell me, have you had a chance to play The Legend of Zelda: The Triforce Heroes yet?
Yeah, I did. I played it. They had those... basically, the demo was worthless unless you were playing during the specific times they allowed online play.
Or you had two friends that were able to play local co-op.
Yeah, that both had the demo. Yes. You know, you couldn't do download play like you will be able to in the final version of the game that comes out this Friday. But I had a blast. I did have some lag problems that were pretty frequent where it was stuttering. And there will be times where you absolutely would just want to choke the person you're paired up with. but then there were times where I was the guy that probably needed to be choked. But yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's classic Zelda dungeon gameplay, but really kind of laser focused on this whole kind of speedier, more arcade idea of playing with two other people. And it was charming.
Very much like Four Swords Adventure.
Exactly, yeah. But I think maybe this game, you know, has a shot at being even better than that. I mean, we're going to have 32 levels that are very kind of laser focused on these puzzles that are built around the items. And I love how when you come into a level, you kind of all have to rush to see, you know, who gets what item. And then at the end of a level, you kind of rush to the treasure chest to see who gets the rare reward. But anyway, yeah, it was pretty funny, especially in the level where you had to pull blocks. It was the fire level, and you had to take, you know, there were typical Zelda giant blocks that you had to kind of maneuver around so you could use it as a platform in different places.
Yeah, I think that was the level I played at E3.
Oh, okay. And, you know, there were times where one of the guys would just not understanding that we all needed to pull in the same direction. Or there was times, you know, when somebody spotted, you know, a health up or a clay pot or whatever and wanted to pull the block over there to go that way when the rest of us wanted to pull the block, you know, more in the direction that's going to actually take us to the path ahead. So sometimes it's kind of fun, surprisingly, I thought, to just communicate during those little, you know, those little emoticon-ish tiles that you touch on the bottom screen where you show Link with pom-poms or you show a drawing of Link kind of like saying, let's go, or like over here, or we need to use an item, or let's all sit on each other's shoulders.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it can even be kind of, and when you finally do kind of all mesh and understand what you're trying to communicate and you complete something and you move on to the next part, it's fun to just kind of spam that, you know, that tile of Link cheering, and you really do feel kind of some euphoria for that. But then, you know, it does get frustrating when people, don't get what you're saying and don't all row in the same direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it sounds like you had a much better time playing the game than I did, because, you know, I've been sick recently. I wasn't able to play the game during all of the demo windows. But when I did, I just had the toughest time getting a party together. Like, for the longest time, it was me and this one other guy in the waiting room. We kept, getting a third person to join, and the third person would just drop out. Then we had to wait for another guy to show up. Then he would drop out. And then, you know, it kept going and going. And finally, we got three people together. We formed a team. We went into a dungeon. And then the guy I'd been waiting with this whole time is like, oh, I suddenly have to go. The emergency. Gotta go. And he had to leave, too. And at that point, I gave up because I've been doing this for like 25 minutes. I'm like, you know what? I don't feel good. I got better things to do with my time. I played the game at E3. So, yeah, that was how it ended for me.
Man, that sucks. I never had a problem. In fact, I never even had to wait. As soon as I was put into a lobby, it was like, it was as if two other people had jumped on board at the exact same time. Although, I did get stuck in the lobby for a while once because I guess if you do a running dash into the wall, randomly sometimes some kind of thing, I couldn't even really tell what it was.
Oh yeah, it's sort of like a beach ball or something.
Yeah, we'll fall down, and this one guy was just determined to do that endlessly, and me and the other guy were standing on the Triforce symbol on the floor ready to warp into the dungeon, and he's just doing that. So
did you pick him up and carry him over there?
No, but you know what, during the it's funny how passive aggressive you can be when you're actually playing the game. During the dungeons, there would be times when a guy just wasn't getting it. And, you know, I wouldn't want to seem jerky, but I would go grab him. And as far as I know, once you've grabbed somebody, they can't get away unless you put them down. And I would just kind of throw them where I wanted them to go. Like, no, up on this block. You do not see that there is this thing here. And then sometimes they're like, oh, and then they start doing what they're supposed to do, and that's great. But, you know, I wonder how tiring that's going to be if, you know, if you're online and people keep trying to force you to do what they want to do.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully we'll be able to, you know, play it mostly with friends in the final version. That wasn't there in the demo, but it will be there in the final game. So that should alleviate a lot of those problems.
Yeah, and you do only need two other friends, so it's not like you're having to get a whole crew together.
Mm-hmm. There is one other game that came out recently that I wanted to make a very brief mention of. That is the Sega title I've been waiting for a while. 3D Sonic the Hedgehog 2 did finally come out on the 3DS. I've been playing that, and, you know, it's everything I was hoping for. It's an excellent port of an excellent classic platformer. It's only $6. Everyone should go buy it. And along those same lines, a bunch of Sega-themed 3DS themes were made available. Or I guess two were made available, and then a couple more are coming. But those are all pretty cool, too. So if you're a Sega fan, make sure to check into that section of your 3DS.
I've really got to catch up on those 3D classics.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there. All right, that was a lot of news. That was a lot of impressions. But we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with our big topic about licensed games. Okay, we are back, and we're here to discuss our big topic of this week, which is licensed games. And, the reason I was thinking about this week is because I was out on vacation. I was hanging out at, Walt Disney World in Florida, and, it got me thinking about, how there used to be, all kinds of, pretty cool Disney games that were out on, old Nintendo systems, the NES, the Super NES, even the N64. And, just got me thinking that they really don't do that sort of thing anymore. So I thought, hey, let's make that our discussion topic this week.
Yeah, licensed games, have a mostly bad reputation going years and years back from, all the companies, the Acclaims, the LGNs of the world. That
THQ.
Yeah, that more often than not just wanted to, pay a lot of cash for a license to the whatever movie or cartoon show or comic book was hot recently. And then really quickly throw together, a substandard game and put it out as a quick little cash grab. That was kind of the reputation that they got, going all the way back to Friday the 13th on the NES.
Oh, yes. That was a LJN classic. LJN, really did manage to make some truly awful games. Friday the 13th, it's not quite as bad as some people think. It actually had some good ideas in there, but it was just pulled off, so poorly. So very, very poorly. But I remember their X-Men game where you had a second AI-controlled partner, and almost every time I played the game, my partner would run off somewhere and, explode within 5 seconds of the game starting. It was hilarious.
Well, the worst kind of thing that I think, especially, when you had more technical limitations in these systems, is when the licensed games wouldn't even really resemble what they're based on. There was a Superman game that I remember was on Super Nintendo and Genesis, I think. And, you couldn't even really fly or do anything. It's just Superman walking from left to right, punching thugs and taking damage when low-level street thugs happen to connect with a hit. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you think of a Superman game, you'd be pretty much invincible.
Yeah. So, it wasn't until, there was the great, Capcom games, like you said, DuckTales and that kind of stuff back on the NES and some of those other systems. But I remember...
Magical Quest on the Super NES was another, fantastic Disney one that I remembered fondly as I was walking around the theme park.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it wasn't until Spider-Man, the first one on the PlayStation, that really was like, holy cow, we can actually be Spider-Man. I mean...
Well, it also came out on N64, don't forget that.
Oh, okay. But that had been the original it was fine. You were just happy if you got a fun game that just happened to kind of look like characters you were interested in. But Spider-Man was like, this is what it's like to be Spider-Man. You swing around this city, fully 3D, open world city, even though it had horrible draw-in and all that stuff. But, you got to do everything a spider can. And now you kind of get that. The best example of today, obviously, is the Batman Arkham series, which is, you take Batman out of it, it's still just a fantastic game made by a top-notch AAA developer. Then you put Batman in it, and it just makes it so much more exciting because you get to experience that world, do the things that he does. In the last game, you drive the Batmobile, even although, some fans thought that was a bit too much Batmobile. But you know, that's the whole, that's the kind of built-in promise of these games, is that if you like this movie or you like this comic, you're going to get to experience what it's like to be inside of this thing that you love through the fantasy magic of interactive entertainment.
Well, here's, you know, what I thought, you know, kind of would tend to separate, you know, the bad licensed games from the good licensed games. And the bad ones were either the ones where really they obviously just didn't care and they just wanted a quick cash grab. Or it was the times when they had to, you know, stick to a very stringent rollout plan. They had a very specific license. You know, if this is supposed to recreate the movie, this is supposed to come out alongside the movie. And we saw a lot of that on like GameCube and Wii U.
Or the Wii, probably, Wii, right,
Wii.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wii is what I meant to say, sorry. You know, the Sega stuff stood out. You know, Captain America, Iron Man.
Exactly.
Those games were Thor. All the Marvel stuff then, you know, that came out and was clearly rushed, but needed to make that deadline. It was like, oh, you know, and it ties into the story here. You know, the G.I. Joe game from EA is one that, you know, felt like it could have been a lot better if it didn't need to coincide alongside the movie. And, you know, like I said, even earlier than that, you know, a lot of, you know, movie-based games on the, you know, older platforms seem to be suffering from just not enough time. But it was when someone's like, okay, you know, this doesn't really have anything to do with this movie, or, oh, it's based on, you know, some really old property, you know, Super Star Wars. The movie came out, you know, how many years ago was that? You know, 10, 11 years after the last movie? Sure, we can take all the time in the world we want to make this game, and it's going to turn out great. You know, the Spider-Man game wasn't tied into anything. But of course, some of the Spider-Man games are based, you know, around the movies, and, you know, they don't have quite that reputation that the original one did.
Well, it's a,
same with Batman, obviously.
It's a built-in problem to the platform, and I think maybe, you know, when you first mentioned to me the topic for today, I thought, well, you know what? It's funny. You don't see a lot of those traditional kind of movie tie-in games and that type of licensed games anymore. And I think it just became impossible to do, because even to make a mediocre cash grab game, you know, in kind of the current generation of HD gaming, you just don't have the time to even make something that's serviceable, because, mm-hmm. you know, the movie studios and stuff aren't going to bring you on board, sign those contracts, and start telling you kind of the secrets of their plot and sharing kind of set assets with you and giving you all the pieces you need to build your game. They're not going to share that stuff with you until they're actually in production. Mm-hmm. And, you know, production, the amount of time it takes to make even a AAA blockbuster movies is a lot quicker than a turnaround than what you get in games a lot of the times these days. So, yeah, you just can't do it. You can't say...
Well, you can do it. You just can't do it on a modern console. Or it's not worth it to try to do it on a modern console, because this stuff
right.
still exists. It's just all on Android and iOS.
Right. That's where the you know, we can get this stuff done so fast.
It's really easy.
That
it's like, hey,
gone.
Sure, I can make a game based on this movie comes out next week. I'll just reskin my Mash 3 Puzzler and boom, there you go.
Right, right. But yeah, no further attempts from Sega to put Iron Man onto you know, Wii U or the PS4 or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is kind of a shame, because, you know, there were a lot of pretty decent games back in the day that, you know, did come from licensed titles. I don't want to, you know, go, you know, too much down nostalgia lane here, but, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 4 on the Super NES was a fantastic, fantastic game, a great example of a beat-em-up that actually, you know, went above and beyond what the arcade game could do and was just, you know, so much crazy fun in co-op mode. I love Batman Returns. Batman Returns, based on the movie. I don't think it actually came out alongside the movie. It might have had, you know, like a 6-month window. Maybe it coincided with the you know, VHS release or something. But that was an awesome brawler, one of my all-time favorite 2D side-scrolling beat-em-ups that just had, you know, such fun techniques. You know, I mean, I know Batman is known for, you know, a lot more than this sort of stuff now, but back, you know, on the Super NES, it was just, you know, this, you know, punch him in the face kind of game mostly. You could, you know, grab two thugs and bash their heads together, or, you know, grab a guy and, you know, throw him into the background and throw him through a window. And it just had a ton of attention to detail that, you know, you wouldn't really expect from a licensed title.
I had an idea for it. This is a bit of a digression, but I had an idea for a Batman game once that I thought was pretty cool that was actually based all around the Wii remote. And
oh, yeah?
Yeah, going into the idea of of like what it's like to be the character. I thought, well, what if it's essentially, you know, first person, which you wouldn't necessarily think of for a character-based game like this. What if you, mm-hmm.
I know I don't.
If you hold the Wii Remote, especially the one, you know, the later models that have the better tech, and if you make that pinching motion where you press the B trigger and the A button together, and, you know, if it can kind of sense how it's being held, I thought you can essentially put it together. If you're sitting on your couch and you reached up to kind of like your forehead, made the pinching motion, and then pulled down, it's kind of like pulling on a mask, kind of like changing from Bruce Wayne to Batman. Mm-hmm. Also, if you think about your utility belt.
So you're going to tie the Wii Remote to your groin, and that's going to be your utility belt.
Exactly.
I see where you're going. This is clever.
But no, I thought if you reach down and pinched at different kind of areas around your waist.
This does not sound good at all.
I'm telling you, this is the world's best Batman game.
Censored.
But you could, you know, if you, for example, if you did that motion toward your left side, maybe that brings up the Batarang and you're holding it. It would require more of a one-to-one kind of motion. Ultimately, maybe this is a great VR idea, or maybe it's just a terrible idea. But back on point, I love the idea of like, how can we immerse people in this thing, this character, this universe that they obviously love? I think that should be the primary goal of every licensed title. And that should dictate what kind of game it is. It shouldn't be shoehorned into like one genre or other just because that's what's popular. Mm-hmm. But another point is, I think, you know, you want to see great licensed games. You want to see top mm-hmm. talent on licensed games. You need the top talent to make the great games. But
yeah, you want to see these beloved properties, you know, come to life in a good way.
But if you tell somebody, like, make me a Spider-Man version of Arkham Asylum, you know, not necessarily, like, put Spider-Man in an Arkham Asylum-type game, but do what Rocksteady did, you know. You're not beholden to any previous version of Batman. Just take the essence of Batman, make your own thing, make it for interactive entertainment, and just make something that Batman fans are going to respond to. If you did that with a Marvel character, you know, if you want to go get a top, game maker or something like that, it's like, you know, going to J.J. Abrams and saying, we want you to make Star Wars. You know, he's a huge Star Wars fan, but he has to consider this is going to be like the next 4 to 5 years of my life, you know, through production. You know, you think of how long it takes to make a Metal Gear, you know, Solid 5 or a Final Fantasy game. You know, if you've got a top AAA creator, is he going to be willing to play with someone else's toys for that long rather than make up his own? But imagine if you could, you know, I think the Rocksteady's off.
Certainly don't think it's impossible. I mean, I know it's not on Nintendo systems, but just recently Platinum made a pretty excellent Transformers game, for example. And I'll bet that didn't take a ton of production time or much cost, but turned out pretty darn well. And I think they're definitely, you know, good developers, I think they're willing to do that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And maybe it really comes down to the approach. But I was just thinking, you know, like you've got Rocksteady is exiting the Arkham series. And obviously Warner Brothers is going to want to continue that success. Mm-hmm. What would it take? You know, what would you have to give a Hideo Kojima, who's obviously now left Konami, to say, we want you to take, we want Hideo Kojima to take Batman to the next level?
Well, he does love movies, so... You know, I would not actually put Kojima doing a movie-based game out of the realm of possibility. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, a quadruple A name like that working on the games to make them good. I mean, I don't think people even really knew who Rocksteady was before they did the Batman titles. I mean, they certainly... can make good games without being, you know, a studio that everybody knows. I think that's, you know, very much a possibility. And my question is, you know, how come they're not trying to do that more? How come Marvel hasn't said, yes, let's, you know, copy this formula and make an all-new Avengers game that, actually has the resources and time invested in it to make a good game, just to say, hey, here's our popular property on another platform that people can really get immersed in. We do get some licensed stuff out of Marvel, but usually it's like, oh, here's, you know, Lego Marvel or something like that. That's not nearly as immersive or involving as, say the Batman games.
Yeah. And I'm shocked that you haven't people people haven't tried to take that Arkham model and make it their own. I'm shocked we haven't seen an Avengers game or a Spider-Man game or a...
I've seen a lot of Spider-Man games.
Yeah, but they've still kind of been more of along the same lines. I mean, Batman really was... It just came out of nowhere. I mean, the Arkham titles. It really was like, you know, just do a great Batman video game. That's all you got to do. Don't worry about movies. Don't worry about anything. Just do a great Batman video game. But you brought...
But yeah, there are tons of brands that could benefit from that.
But you brought up another interesting point. I mean, where licensed stuff has kind of evolved to and where you do see a lot of it and some of the biggest successes in the industry today is stuff like the Lego games, is stuff like Disney Infinity. These kind of mega license games where they've kind of pulled everything in.
That seems to be where all the licensing stuff has gone. It's sort of, you know, congealed into this giant pool where it's all mixed together in, you know, Disney Infinity or Lego Dimensions. Or, you know, I certainly don't want to put this in the same category, but, you know, Kingdom Hearts as well, which is, you know, just a mixing pool of a bunch of different licenses and putting it all out there.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it follows suit with a lot of, you know, other trends in gaming and business in general. It's just these mega kind of conglomerations where you kind of pull together your resources and pull together audiences, you know, to help cover these massive development costs.
I'm going to confess, I am not the biggest fan of the Lego games. They're just too devoid of challenge for me, I guess.
Well, I appreciate them for what they are. I don't really play them. They're not my thing either. I've dabbled in them occasionally. I did think that, you know, I played a little bit of Lego Marvel on Wii U, and I thought it had a great spirit to it, and in a strange way, it was kind of maybe one of the best Marvel games I'd seen in years and years. But yeah, they obviously are really meant for primarily for younger, less experienced players, I think. But I think if you can look at them from that perspective, they're at least, you know, quality titles.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do have some value in that regard. It's just totally not for me. And the sense of humor just, you know, totally doesn't mesh with my own either.
I tried playing Disney Infinity, both the original version and I played a mission or two in 3.0. And my experience with that game so far, which again, admittedly, is very limited, is I'm not impressed with it at all. I like that it combines everything, and I think the toys are cool, but I think they could do a lot more with making a fun gameplay experience. Although people have told me that the Star Wars modules are getting better. But anyway, back more specifically on topic, it is kind of a fun and interesting way to treat licensed properties. You know, it's not just, you know, can you imagine what it would like to actually be in control of The Incredibles? You get to live that movie. Now it's, what if you lived that movie and five other movies at the same time?
Kind of. That was the problem with Disney Infinity. You couldn't combine them like that.
Yeah, I guess you can maybe in certain ways, but yeah, they are picky about which characters they'll let you use sometimes.
Well, I guess I haven't played it, but from what I had heard, at least in the original, you weren't allowed to mix up characters and worlds.
Yeah, they really wanted to make you buy certain toys for every little. I mean, that game, more than any other, I think nickels and dimes the hell out of you. And not just nickels and dimes. I should say more like hundreds and, you know, 20s and hundreds the hell out of you.
Well, Lego Dimensions, you know, certainly seems like it's going to be plenty expensive as well. They're not done. They got a lot more content coming.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because obviously with Marvel, Star Wars, and everything under Disney Infinity, that's all in the Disney umbrella already. Lego's got to go out and get their own kind of IP.
Well, they have a lot of licenses already. It's like, yo, dog, I heard you like licenses. There is a license for your license.
No, they do, but the point I was about to make is, you know, it's hard to imagine. I mean, obviously Disney would never include a non-Disney license in Disney Infinity, but theoretically Lego could go out and license anything and then pop it in there. You know, so maybe instead of seeing, you know, X number of movie license games in the future like we did years ago, it'll just be that when that big hot movie's about to come out, it shows up in Lego Dimensions.
Yep, that could be. Tell me, what are your thoughts on Kingdom Hearts?
I've never been a big fan.
Oh, snap.
Here's the thing. My wife, actually, when I first met my wife, one of the things that we bonded over early on was at that moment, she was super into the original Kingdom Hearts. And she found out I worked on, at the time, PSM, a PlayStation magazine, and she was asking me for tips. And I actually had to research some tips online because I actually hadn't played much of the game myself. But I was really blown away by the original. Just the idea of it, the concept of it. And you know, just watching trailers for it, like the opening video that plays that just shows all these characters together, kind of brought a tear to my eye.
Yeah, I mean, it's like stunning.
But here's my problem with the series now. I just think it's evolved to the point where it's unmanageable.
It's totally flown off the freaking rails.
The story is ridiculous. You'd have to have, like, followed it across a ridiculous number of platforms, including tiny cell phone games and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, how many years has it been around and 3 still isn't out? I mean, yeah. It's the most...
It came out in 2002 originally, so... Yeah,
I mean, it's just...
13 years.
It's overwrought. It's fallen prey to endless digression.
And they've got about 2.8 games out.
And I don't, you know... I'm not saying anything about anybody who loves that series and has kept up with it and has invested the time you need to really get the most out of it. I'm sure for them, the experience is fantastic. But as someone who just kind of, I don't really care so much about the Sora side of it. I care more about, hey, Mickey's meeting the guy from Tron side of it, which mm-hmm. actually I just kind of described Disney Infinity. But I did like the spirit and the tone of the game that it kind of took this stuff strangely seriously. Even when Mickey and Goofy and Donald are involved. So I would have liked to have seen, I guess the way I would describe it is I would have liked to have seen the Kingdom Hearts series remain kind of more pure of spirit. And I think now the focus is much, well, this is again what I'm observing more from the outside. So, you know, please correct me if I'm wrong. But it seems like it focuses much more on kind of the Square end of it than the Disney end of it. And I feel like for me, at least, that's a little backwards.
Well, I do feel like, you know, they've sort of gotten all caught up in their own mythology way too much. And, you know, I think they must believe in that they have some amazing, great mythology here. And they don't. It's kind of all terrible. And there's no need for it to be so convoluted and ridiculous. But the original concept still remains a lot of fun. Just, you know, getting to travel from Disney World to Disney World and see these different characters. And, you know... I even thought that it was really cool when you could, you know, travel to worlds and see different Square characters. And that's something that's actually really fallen out of the game, is that you don't really bump into the Final Fantasy, you know, 7 cast anymore like you did in the original, I don't think.
Hmm.
I'd actually like to say maybe expand upon that and go to different Square worlds as well or something. But yeah, the whole, you know, mythology with Roxas and Sora and the organization stuff is just ridiculously overwrought. But, you know, I'd like to see them, you know, try to cast off some of that stuff somehow, try to, you know, just make it more, you know, pure, like I think you were saying, and just trying to, you know, explore these different worlds and, you know, meet these different characters, because, you know, the production values are super high, you know, exploring and combat is really fun, and I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, that, you know, like one of my, you know, crazy licensed dream ideas would be to have a Nintendo exclusive title where they include a Nintendo world as well. Because so that would be pretty darn phenomenal.
Yeah, I always thought that was a huge missed opportunity. That was kind of a trailblazing game if you think about it in terms of merging IP. And right. You know, if you're talking video games, who has better IP than Nintendo? I mean, that would be the dream kind of matchup. But you know, I guess that's what Smash Brothers is for. That's what Disney Infinity is for. But yeah, I mean, I guess to kind of sum it up, licensed gaming has gone through a lot of ups and downs and a big evolution. And at first, again, when you mentioned this, I thought, well, licensed gaming kind of almost isn't even around anymore. But obviously it is. Yeah. It's just kind of mutated and changed and grown into other areas. Just maybe not the way we used to recognize it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not around as it used to be, but it's still around in, you know, different forms.
I do really wish we could at some point and somehow go back to those days of these great kind of console titles that just appear seemingly out of nowhere that are based on just the randomest kind of crazy IP, you know, whether it be like a kid's cartoon show or you know, a movie game that just happened to be great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, before we wrap this up, do you have any, you know, favorite classic licensed property games like that?
Oh, we named a few of them, I think. You know, DuckTales. What would be my favorite? Well, you know what? I guess... If I really am talking about my all-time favorite licensed game, it's probably the Arkham series. I just think, you know, they do a phenomenal job, not just making a great Batman experience, but a great game period.
I guess the two that I hadn't brought up yet would be Tiny Toon Adventures Buster Busts Loose on the Super Nintendo, which had this awesome, you know, wall-climbing play mechanic and a great sense of humor. And Astro Boy Omega Factor on Game Boy Advance, which was a treasure title. And, you know, I really didn't know anything about Astro Boy at that time. But, boy, I really learned to like a lot about that property after playing that game. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's what the best licensed games can do. They can turn you into fans, even if you weren't before.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. Well, I think we're going to wrap this up here, but before we go, I'm going to have a dramatic reading. This from a non-licensed game, the back of the box of Sunsoft's Blaster Master. Mega graphics. Mega action. The New York sewers were never like this. You've fallen down a hidden manhole into a world of creatures so terrifying they'd scare the rats away. You can panic and perish, or blast your way through an endless maze of tunnels, searching for the secret passages to your escape. And that's the easy part, because the masters of the caverns lay waiting. Prehistoric creatures so powerful, so gigantic, they literally fill your screen. So load your arsenal and get ready for Blaster Master, Authentic Arcade Edition.
Was that game even in the arcade?
It was not. It was not. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow The Hoff on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and I'm at ChrisSlate. Hoff has a cool blog called Still Playing with Power, which you should definitely check out at ChrisTheHoff.tumblr.com. And you can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com for anything that strikes your fancy. And hey, if you like the podcast, we always appreciate it if you drop by iTunes and leave a rating. That's very much appreciated.
Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Slate.
See ya.
And our martial arts instructor, Billy Lee.
Dragon win.
We will see you next time.